It's like if Google Flights integrated award bookings into their search results and then gave you advice on how to transfer the points that you need. It really is that nice and easy. Hey everyone, welcome to episode 60 of The Daily Churn. I've got a bit of a different kind of episode today. So if you recall from the last episode, the monthly recap, I mentioned that I have some friends and family that still book their flights with cash. So domestic and international flights, they're not using points to book, they're paying cash. And as a churner who hasn't paid cash for a flight in probably close to 10 years, that was a little bit concerning for me to hear. And so I wanted to just kind of address that head on and maybe do an episode on the tools and the workflows that I use to avoid having to pay cash for my award flights. But if you are someone who already uses points for all of your flight bookings, don't worry, you can skip straight to the second half of the episode where I do a deep dive into a few of the new tools that I've been using that have completely changed the way I go about finding and booking award travel. But if you are newer to all of this, definitely stick around for the first half, because the common concern I heard from like friends and family when I asked them like, what's holding you back from booking award flights for everything? Is that it's just really overwhelming. You know, it's a lot if you're not familiar with it. There's a lot of carriers, there's a lot of point options, a lot of loyalty programs, carriers, credit cards. You got to figure out which carriers are partnered with who, what alliance they're part of, where do you transfer points from? And then when you transfer points in, you can't transfer them back. And so that's kind of stressful, this one-way approach to moving points around. And then you've got like transfer ratios that you have to be mindful of, as well as transfer bonuses, because that all ties into the question of like, am I maximizing my points? Am I booking the best flights that meet my needs based on the points that I have? And is that the best rate given that maybe I have multiple point options and multiple flight routes that I could take? Am I getting a good point value? What points should I acquire? What credit cards should I open when there is seemingly just an infinite number of options out there? And when you kind of just summarize it like that, it's a lot. I mean, even for seasoned churners and travel hackers, the same kinds of thoughts run through my head. I'm just more used to it, and it's more of a background process versus a blocker. But it can still be stressful because there's just so many options, and most of those options are going to be super specific to the route that you want to travel. So if you're flying a new route, you're basically a noob again. Whether you've booked a million award flights or you've booked none, you sort of have to figure it out from the beginning. Like I've, at this point, I think mastered booking Japan award travel. But that's just one route out of thousands of different routes and destinations you could be flying. There's millions of different permutations for all the places you could visit. And so it's kind of less important that you know the specifics of a certain route, unless you plan on flying that same route over and over again for the rest of your life. I mean, I plan on going to Japan quite a few times more, so it was useful to have that kind of deep knowledge about Japan award travel and do episodes on it. But I also plan to visit a lot of other destinations that I haven't been to before. And for those, it's more useful to have a general workflow that you can follow that can help you quickly answer questions that you have, and also tools that can make that whole process easier. And that's how you remove some of the frustration and anxiety and stress of just the unfamiliarity of booking award travel with especially new routes. Because when things are stressful, you tend to avoid it. And you tend to just take the easier option, which is usually just paying cash. That's what the majority of people do, is pay cash for their flights, even though they know award bookings are a thing. Or if you have award booking experience with specific routes, you often kind of end up just going to the same places over and over again because you know those are easy to book and you know how to book them. Or you spend a lot of time and energy researching a new award flight, end up booking one, and it turns out to be not the most optimal one that you could have booked. I mean, I think those three things probably cover 99.9% of everyone listening here, unless you're just like some award booking genius savant that has every route memorized. Honestly, the most common question I get from folks are often like really specific award booking questions. Like, how do I go from point A to point B to point C on these two airlines with the stopover? And it's always like, yeah, I could tell you exactly what the most optimal route would be. But for me to tell you that, I would have to figure it out myself by running through the workflow. And it's just not feasible for me to do that with every request that I get, unless I just became like a full-time travel booking person. So what's a little more practical and I think a little more generally useful is for me to run through what my workflow is, like how I go about starting from the beginning, booking one of these award flights, like what kind of tools and websites and search engines do I use, how I structure that workflow, like step by step, and also cover some of the new tools that have come to market in the last year or two that are truly amazing and have made a huge difference in terms of saving time and energy when it comes to booking and finding these award flights. I'll cover new services like Pointier and Seats.Aero and how they fit into my workflow and why Pointier is my new absolute favorite award booking tool, how it compares to some of the other services out there like Point.me, and when to use Pointier versus Seats.Aero versus like the old school Expert Flyer, and why ultimately a manual workflow can still yield better results overall. So you can kind of think of this episode as sort of like a woodworking 101 class where I'll show you around the woodshop, show you where all the tools are and what tool to use when, and why, you know, a hammer isn't the best tool for every job because not everything is a nail. And by the end of it, hopefully you'll be a little more comfortable just diving deeper into the areas of award travel booking that are more specific and more interesting to you based on your travel patterns. So lots of good stuff to cover today, but before we get into it, just a reminder that we have a free newsletter that you can join if you'd like to get notified whenever one of these episodes comes out. You can find that over at thedailychurnpodcast.com. We also have a private Discord community if you want to dive deeper into some of these topics and connect with people that have way more knowledge about award travel than I do. So definitely worth checking out if that's something you're interested in. But for now, let's get back into this episode. So I thought I'd start by just kind of walking through my current workflow for booking award travel. And it's a more manual process. And it used to be even more manual until about like a few months ago when I started integrating some of these other newer tools, because it's kind of an exciting time right now for award travel tools. They've sort of just exploded recently. There's a lot of them out there right now. And if you can integrate the right ones at the right time, it can make your workflow more efficient. But I wanted to start with kind of just what my workflow even looks like and walk through some of the more manual steps that are still relevant today, even with the existence of these other tools. So the first thing I always do, and I recommend you always do first as well, is just to look up the flights that you want on Google Flights, specifically Google Flights, because Google Flights is the best flight search engine out there. It's powered by ITA software, which you may be familiar with from like a decade ago. You would go to matrix.itasoftware.com and search for flights that way because it was the best tool in the industry, and Google ended up just buying them. So now if you go to that website, it says the same thing, but it has a little powered by Google at the end, but you don't need to even go to the website directly because it's now integrated directly into Google Flights. And that software, I mean, it really is the GOAT. Like, people on Flyer Talk love this tool. It used to be like the tool to use for finding mistake fares, for doing mileage runs, if you ever did those. I was really into both of those about a decade ago. But these days, it's all just part of Google Flights. And starting there is great because Google Flights gives you some really basic info that you should be aware of for any route that you're trying to book, which is just what airlines are even flying the route. Are there any nonstops? How much do they charge cash to fly these routes? when the variances are in the season calendar, because you can just click the calendar and it'll show you all the pricing options across many different months. So you can kind of see like the seasonality, when's low season, when's high season. And all of that gives you a better understanding of like the cash landscape of what it is you're trying to book. And that's helpful because points options, award options, often just mirror the cash landscape to some extent. So once you've plugged it into Google Flights and you've got your search results, usually you'll find like 3 or 4 different airlines that fly your route nonstop. I'm assuming most of us are going for nonstop these days, like we're all too old for like 3 stopovers on Frontier in order to get to our destination. Like, let's focus on the nonstop routes because that makes things a little easier. And once you know what those are, you just go to each airline's website and search for the award fares for that route on that airline and just see what comes up. And ultimately, you end up with a list of airlines and their award costs, as well as their cash costs, because you have Google Flights pulled up. So you might have one that's like, United costs 15,000 miles on JetBlue. When you searched, it cost 12,000 miles for that route and 10,000 miles on Southwest. And so that's kind of the stage where you sort of mentally compare the values here, right? Like, points are roughly worth 1 to 2 cents per point. So like, you know, 10,000 points are worth usually like $100 to $200. The reason for that valuation is just that's the rate that Amex and Chase will let you cash those points out at. Usually it's 1 cent equals 1 point. Like Capital One will let you redeem your points for travel purchases that you made at 1 cent per point. Chase will let you book through their travel portal where, you know, a $300 flight you can pay for in points instead. And Chase will let you redeem those points at 1.5 cents per point. So a little bit more. And so there's variation, but just for ease of calculation, we can assume a baseline of 1 cent per point. So a 15,000 point United flight is $150 worth of points. And so once you know the points conversion, you kind of just do the math. You know, if the cheapest flight booked using cash is $300 but costs 15,000 points, which is $150 worth of points, then that's pretty good value, right? You're getting 2 cents per point instead of that baseline 1 cent per point. You're saving $300 by spending 15,000 points. That's a good rate. So book that with points, don't book it with cash. But oftentimes, you know, it's a little more comparable. Like if the cheapest flight is $150 and the points is 15,000 points, it can kind of go either way. And that's when things get more subjective because it's like, how much do you value each thing? Are you more cash strapped right now or are you points rich right now? And so that true value is going to vary from person to person. And sites like NerdWallet and The Points Guy, they'll try and give you a specific value, like United miles are worth 1.2 cents per point, or Southwest miles are worth 1.4 cents per point. But you're really kind of splitting hairs at that point, and the true value is going to vary from person to person. Like maybe you hate flying Southwest, so you'd rather pay more for JetBlue or United. Or maybe you have miles already at United, so even though it costs a little more through JetBlue, you want to use up your United miles first. Or maybe you have Amex points, which don't transfer to United, but they do transfer to JetBlue. So you rule out United for that reason. Or maybe you have Chase points that transfer to United, but doesn't transfer to Delta. So you rule out Delta. A lot of these kinds of considerations are where I think a lot of people stop and give up because it feels like there's a lot of different rules and options and permutations, and they're not sure like what credit card to open in order to transfer where and which option is the best option. And you start feeling decision fatigue from all of these choices. And that's when you just pull out your wallet and you pay cash, right? And churners, I think, sometimes forget this struggle because we're so used to booking award travel and opening new credit cards that we forget we're in the 1% of the 1% of people that are travel hacking and optimizing their points and their credit cards. We forget that this hobby is pretty outside the box and is not the normal path that most people take. And so oftentimes speaking to people who are newer to award booking, you kind of forget that and you just like assume they know all these things. And it's like, no, you gotta sometimes start from square one. And if you're newer to this, the good news is if it feels like there's like a mountain blocking your path, like a mountain of knowledge that you don't know that seems insurmountable, the good news is that actually it's just a little hill. Like it looks big right now because you're standing at the bottom of it, but it's not. It's a hill that anyone can climb. A toddler could climb this hill. It's the hill of booking domestic award travel. It's really easy and you can scale it with pretty minimal effort and energy and time just by following this workflow. The actual mountain is the mountain behind this hill. That's the mountain of international award travel. That's the mountain that has base camps along the way. And we'll get into that a little later of how to more easily navigate the real mountain. Let's call that Mount Everest. But let's start with just the hill in front of us now, which is domestic award travel. And climbing the domestic award travel hill might be all you need. You know, not everyone is trying to scale Everest. Not everyone is trying to book first-class award flights on the newest planes to the most exotic destinations. For a lot of folks, just saving money on their domestic award travel, being able to fly across country, visit family whenever they want, without having to spend thousands of dollars on that, that's already a pretty big deal, and that may just be your goal when it comes to award travel. And that's a good goal to have because domestic awards are very easy to master from a points optimization standpoint, as well as from like a credit card opening perspective. Because domestically, there's only a handful of big airline carriers and credit card companies. So the big airlines are like United, American, Delta, Southwest, JetBlue, and maybe Alaska. Then credit cards that you could possibly open, there's only a few companies. It's Chase, Amex, Citi, and Capital One. Then like the lower tier ones like Bank of America, US Bank, and Wells Fargo. And that's it. That's a pretty small, finite list. And chances are the routes that you care to fly domestically anyway, only a few of those airlines and a few of those credit cards will apply. So it's very much a manageable hill of knowledge, and you don't even have to know all of the stuff. I still use Google all the time to Google stuff when it comes to that, because it's like I don't live near a Delta hub, for example. So whenever I have to book Delta, I always end up Googling like how to transfer miles to Delta. So Google is your best friend here, but the main thing I want to impart is just being clear about your travel goals. Like if you tally up all of your travel expenses, how much are flights costing you each year? And if you're not tracking your expenses to that granularity, definitely check out episode 36, Simplify, which is an app that imports all of your data, transactional data, financial data, automatically, and sums it up into categories, and you can see everything. It's kind of like Mint, but a paid version and better. I think another alternative that people are migrating to now that Mint has shut down is Monarch. I haven't tried Monarch personally, but Simplify is great. But it helps you kind of just to see what you're spending money on and how much you're spending on flights. And that can help you understand, like, what am I flying that's costing all this money? Like, what routes do you fly the most often? Are you flying from San Francisco to New York a few times a year? Do you want to be able to fly that route for free instead of however much you're paying for it? And so from there, it's pretty easy to then just follow the workflow to figure out, okay, what airlines fly that route and how much do award flights cost for that route for each of the airlines? And you can just Google, you know, how to transfer miles to that airline and open a credit card that lets you transfer to that airline, or maybe even open a card that's tied directly with that airline, like a United card or a Southwest card. It just depends on whoever has the best sign-up bonus right now. And, you know, you can listen to this podcast, The Monthly Recap, where I cover some of these top offers and the cards that I'm opening and the cards that you can open. And in a matter of literally like 3 months, you can easily, with very minimal effort, go from 0 miles and points to having 100,000 or 200,000 or more. It's a baby could do it level of effort to accumulate a few hundred thousand miles in a few months. But it isn't instant. And I think that's what trips a lot of people up as well, is that they want the points now. They're trying to book their flight now, and they don't have the points now. So they pay cash, and then they forget about it until a few months later when they have another flight to book. And it becomes a cash booking again. And it's kind of this vicious loop. And the way you break the loop is by scaling that little hill, the hill of knowledge, now, and just figure out your travel pattern so that you can start banking the points you need. And you only need a 3 month lead time, because that's how long these credit card points usually take to post, these signup bonuses. You usually have 90 days to meet the requirements of the signup bonus. So in 3 months, you can never have to worry about paying cash for flights ever again. And you'll be so much happier once you've made it to the top of this hill versus just looking up at that hill all the time and hearing your friends talk about how awesome it is at the top of the hill. You can just climb it. Just do it. But once you're on the top of this hill, that's when you can see the big ass mountain behind it, right? The mountain of international award travel bookings. And you've like had a taste, you know, the hill was pretty easy to climb. It's pretty nice at the top of the hill, but the real mountain, that mountain looks steep. Like there's cliffs, there's edges, there's rocks falling off. And sadly, that is the state of booking international travel. It's a lot of work, but luckily, the same sort of workflow applies, where you can start with Google Flights and you find the nonstops for your international destination and see what airlines even fly that route and figure out the award cost for each airline. But that's around the point where you've like reached the first base camp and things now get a little harder because you're in a much bigger playing field with international awards. There are not just a handful of airlines that you can count on one hand anymore. There are all of the international airlines, hundreds of airlines flying thousands of different routes. And that's when things like knowledge and experience and research and planning and time spent doing it comes into play, because things like airline alliances come into play and exponentially increase the amount of permutations that are possible with your award booking. And so if you're not familiar with airline alliances, it's basically just airlines internationally have teamed up to share benefits across their loyalty programs. So for example, you can accumulate miles with United that you can then use to book travel on ANA, the Japanese airline, because it's part of Star Alliance. Or your points at Delta can be used with China Airlines because they're part of SkyTeam. Or your miles with American Airlines can be used to book award travel on British Airways and Japan Airlines because they're all part of Oneworld. And so those are the three major international airline alliances. And it's a good thing those exist because you're able to use your miles across other partner airlines that aren't just the airline that you've been flying with. But these partner award bookings are what make things so complicated, but also potentially super lucrative. And they're the main focus of the whole travel hacking hobby. Like if you see people post on blogs or Instagram or TikTok about these first class seats that they scored flying to the Maldives or flying to Europe, and that's all supported by these partner award bookings. And it's a way of getting these expensive international flights for as few points as possible. Partner rewards are how you can achieve that. You know, using the mountain analogy, it's a different way of climbing the mountain. Like, you thought hiking shoes were great for going up the little hill? Wait till you see the kind of equipment you can get for hiking a mountain. You know, ropes, harnesses, ice picks, like it now has expanded exponentially. So instead of simply transferring your Chase points over to United to then book a flight on United flying on a United aircraft from, let's say, San Francisco to Tokyo, which you could absolutely do, you can now also use your United miles to fly that same route on ANA, All Nippon Airways, because they're part of Star Alliance, which means United will let you use United miles to book their Star Alliance partners. And this could be appealing to you because airlines often price their partner awards differently, often lower than their own awards. Now, in the US, that's less relevant because in the US, most airlines have shifted to dynamic pricing instead of a fixed award chart. It used to be a fixed award chart as of even, you know, like 5 years ago, but pretty much everyone now has shifted to the dynamic award chart. And award miles now will change based on demand. And by change, I mean mostly just increase. They never really go down when demand is low. They only ever seem to go up and become inflated when demand is higher because, you know, capitalism. So thanks to dynamic award pricing, you can often end up paying like 400,000 United miles for a one-way business class flight to Japan flying on a United airplane. And if you do the quick math, that's like $4,000 worth of points for a one-way business class ticket to Japan. Not a good deal at all, but there are people out there booking it. However, there are other ways, which is that international carriers are still, for the most part, using fixed award charts for their partners. Fixed as in it costs a flat number of miles to fly from, let's say, America to Japan that doesn't change based on whatever their demand algorithm has calculated it out to be. Instead, if you transferred your Chase points not to United, but to Virgin Atlantic, which is another Star Alliance partner, you could use those Virgin miles to book ANA instead, because ANA is also still part of Star Alliance. And Virgin's partner booking award chart is extremely good. So a partner booking with Virgin means you use Virgin miles that you transferred over to book a flight that isn't with Virgin. It's with one of their partners, in this case, ANA. The same way, you know, with United, you could use United miles to book ANA with Virgin. You can use Virgin miles because they're all part of Star Alliance. That chart only charges 45,000 miles each way in business to fly with their partners. So instead of you paying 400,000 miles to fly with United, you could be paying a tenth of that, only pay 45,000 miles if you go through Virgin instead. It's the same Chase points that you're transferring over, you're just transferring it to a different airline. Or maybe you don't have Chase points, but you have Amex points. Well, Amex can just transfer over to ANA directly. And so you could potentially book that same flight with ANA directly. And ANA, because they're based in Japan, they have a better award chart, just generally speaking, because it's usually just American airlines that are trying to squeeze every last dollar for shareholders. In Japan, they have a different kind of mentality about how corporations should work, and it's actually a more fair pricing system for their award travel. And so you could book with ANA directly. That's another option. It's a different cost. And you can kind of see how the permutations already, just for one route, are starting to escalate. Like, I did a full episode on ANA bookings. I did a follow-up episode a couple episodes ago on the updated rules in 2024. I mean, you really need like a full hour, 2 hour episode to cover each specific route because each of those episodes is backed by a lot of research. Like, I spent probably 40 hours figuring out ANA award bookings the first time, which I then converted into an episode. And that latest episode, another 10, 20 hours to do the 2024 update on ANA and JAL first and business class award bookings. So you can see where the time investment comes in and why domestic award bookings is like a little baby hill and international is a mountain thanks to all these partner award permutations. If at this point in the episode you've been just completely scared off of international award flight bookings, don't worry, there is good news coming. The first piece of good news is that booking international award flights follows the same kind of workflow as the domestic flights. You know, you still start with Google Flights, but once you figure out what the airlines are that fly to where you want to go, then it's more Googling, you know, a lot of Googling about like how to book business class to Japan, how to book business class on ANA, how to transfer miles to Virgin Atlantic. It's a lot of reading of blogs, of Flyer Talk threads, of Reddit. And, you know, back in the day, you really needed to set aside a lot of time to research all of this. But things have sort of changed, like the amount of research that you need to do is no longer as intensive as that. And, you know, in the past, when I say in the past, I mean just even a couple years ago, there wasn't really any way to avoid doing all that groundwork, all that research, all that studying. You either just had to suck it up and pay whatever inflated price United wants to charge, or you had to go deep and just like spend a week in a hole figuring all of this out. And people, myself included, were down to do this because these international award bookings tend to be the more aspirational bookings. You know, they're longer flights, so you want to be comfortable, and they're generally more costly anyway. But to fly business or first, it's like $5,000 to $25,000 if you paid cash. So the potential opportunity of only having to pay like 100,000 miles, that's a huge value. It's $1,000 worth of points versus paying like $25,000 if you paid in cash. Like, what is that, like 25 cents per point? So 25x your 1 cent per point baseline. So yeah, you were down to do it for big trips, things like honeymoons. Like my honeymoon over a decade ago now, I probably spent 80 plus hours, at least 30, 40 hours of which were just on the phone with United, like actual time with headset next to my ear, 30, 40 hours, because that includes their hold times, which at least back then was insane. And I did it because I wanted to book an amazing trip for my wife and I for our honeymoon. And I only had United miles from my job as a consultant, where I was traveling around the US. The company was paying for my flights. And I didn't really even know about churning. I was, like most people who had miles, earning it the hard way. And I researched all these partner award rules, the availability options, spent so much time on Flyer Talk. And this was before like travel blogs and Instagram, and there was no TikTok. So all that stuff was a little harder to find than it is today. But out of those 80 hours, I was able to book like Thai Airways first class, Singapore business. We flew to Thailand, Singapore, Japan, the Maldives. It was a massive trip, and I used up all of the United miles that I had accumulated, as well as like half my sanity to just book all of this. But now there are tools that basically easy mode this mountain. Like, they've built a gondola from the base to the top that you can just sit on. And these have only really come into play like in the last year. At least for me, I've only been using them for a few months. Maybe they've been around for longer and I've had my head in the sand, probably. But I've been amazed by how useful these tools have been. They've shaved off so much time from the research aspect, and they're finding new options for flight awards, international flight awards, that I didn't even think of to then go research. So for the second half of this episode, I'm just going to go through this new favorite tool of mine, Points Yeah, and how it compares to some of the other tools out there, and how to integrate it into the existing workflow, and when you should use what tool for what purpose. The thing that's really important to understand when it comes to using these tools are the different travel use cases that they apply towards. So the two main use cases for travel I see when it comes to like international flight awards or just flight awards in general are that there's like two camps. You know, in one camp, you've got folks that are down to really fly anywhere. Their destinations are flexible. Their travel dates are flexible. The main goal is just finding either the cheapest possible flight using points or the most premium flight that you can fly. Whereas the other camp are folks who have very specific destinations and dates in mind. And their goal is just to either fly for free or fly for free, but ideally in a more comfortable cabin like business or first. The difference or the distinction between those two camps is sort of the concept of building a trip around your flight or building your flight around your trip. And I'm mostly these days in the latter camp, where my flight needs to fit with my trips, travel plans, like the dates that I have in mind and the places that I want to go. Because with most of us, you either have jobs with set vacation times and dates, or you're traveling with family, or you have pets where you need to find pet sitters for, so you have to book those in advance and you can't just be changing those dates constantly, which is our situation with our three dogs. My dream one day is to just be a total nomad and we can just go anywhere where the flights are cheap or anywhere where there's first class flight availability for a good rate. But the reality is we only take a few trips a year. And so our goal is just to save money when it comes to domestic travel. And for international, the goal is just to maximize our comfort. You know, ideally, we're flying in business or first on one of these like bucket list type flight opportunities. But if that doesn't pan out, the dates and the places we're going to are more important than the flight itself. And that's not the case for everyone, which is why I wanted to make that distinction, because it affects the kinds of workflow that you use to find and book your award travel. So the workflow we've mostly discussed today is if you have a specific trip with specific dates and a specific destination in mind. It's a different workflow if you are completely flexible and have no preference, because then you wouldn't start with Google Flights. Maybe you start with Seats.Aero, which we'll cover in a little bit. But for the folks that have a destination and dates in mind, Points Yeah, which great name by the way, solves, I think, the biggest time suck for most people, which is research. There's a massive knowledge gap when it comes to booking award travel. Most of us don't know all the things you need to know in order to book the most optimal award flight. Points Yeah knows everything because they're a search engine. They know which airlines partner with which other airlines. They know how much award flights cost, whether you book directly or with an airline's partner. They know which credit card points can transfer to which airlines and which credit cards are running points transfer bonuses. All of that information is presented in a pretty easy to digest Google Flights-like interface. It's like if Google Flights integrated award bookings into their search results and then gave you advice on how to transfer the points that you need. It really is that nice and easy. Like you just enter your route, the flight preferences you might have, like how many passengers are flying, what class of travel, like economy or business or first. You can even filter by what credit card points you have or filter out specific airlines. I usually just leave the credit card points and the airlines things unfiltered so that I can see all the options. And then you enter your dates and you can search a date range, a 4-day date range, or 8 days if you pay premium. So it doesn't have to be one specific date. You can give it a range. And the results load super fast, like in 10 to 20 seconds. And it's searching across almost every airline, including all the partner permutations. And it displays those results to you, sorted by points cost from cheapest to more expensive. And it tells you which airline you need to transfer your miles to and which credit cards can transfer to those airlines. And it tells you if any of those credit cards are currently running any transfer bonuses, and it factors that into the points cost that it displays to you. Pretty amazing. And all of this is free. It's completely free to use. You only pay for premium if you want to search an 8-day date range instead of just a 4-day date range. So what would take hours before if you were searching this manually at each individual airline's website, now you get all the results almost instantly. And the best part is that it shows you results that you wouldn't have even thought to go search for, because it knows every possible partner booking permutation, even for domestic flights. And that was the thing that really convinced me that Points Yeah is the way. Like, this is something you should 100% be using. And it's, you know, why I'm spending a good amount of this episode just talking about Points Yeah, is with these domestic partner award bookings, because that's something I've kind of neglected in my own regular manual workflow. It just never seemed like it'd be worth the effort to do the like amount of research you do for the international award mountain, but do that for domestic awards. That never seemed that appealing to me because domestic awards generally are cheaper anyway. So even if you figure it out and you max it out to the most optimal booking through partners, you save like 5,000 points or like 10,000 points, you know? Whereas with international, you're saving like 100,000 points or 200,000 points. So the cost-benefit analysis there never really made sense for me to do the studying needed to be good at booking domestic partner awards. For example, most recently, I've been trying to book this flight from Denver to Dallas-Fort Worth. It's a positioning flight so that I can fly on Japan Airlines first in business. So I just had to knock out this domestic booking. So I figured business as usual. I looked on Google Flights and saw that only United and American really fly nonstop between Denver and Dallas-Fort Worth. Usually I try and fly Southwest because we have a companion pass, but Southwest doesn't fly to Dallas-Fort Worth, at least not on that route. So I thought, okay, cool, United and American it is then, and I'd prefer not to pay cash, so I'll book with points, but nothing transfers to American Airlines. I knew this. Only Bilt transfers to American Airlines, and that partnership has ended recently as well. So the only really way to get American Airlines miles now is to open an American Airlines credit card, and I didn't really want to do that. So I ruled out that option and went with United. I'm like, United, pretty easy to transfer miles to. You can transfer miles over from Chase. I went on United's website to see how much the award flight would cost. Cost 15,000 miles. Pretty good. Cash rate was about 150. So pretty comparable, but still worth it for us. You know, we're trying to save cash because we're points rich and, you know, hoarding cash for the whole fire thing. So my thought process then was just like, okay, I could either transfer my Chase points or I could open the United Business credit card because currently I remember seeing on Doctor of Credit, there's an all-time high offer of 100,000 United miles when you spend $5,000 on a new United Business card. And business was appealing because then it wouldn't affect my 524 status with credit cards with Chase. Plus, having some extra United miles around would be useful in general because United is great for things like positioning flights, and also they fly to a bunch of like random smaller airports that no one else really flies to. And with the card, you get a free checked bag, which would be useful for our snowboards. So I thought, cool, all right, I'm going to open this United business card and added it to my list of like churning to-dos. And that was sort of my whole like process beginning to end. It took maybe like 30 minutes of research, and it was sort of the result of like me combining this workflow with my background knowledge on United and credit cards, and I was pretty pleased with myself. You know, I had saved myself $150 or $300 if you include my wife too, all for the cost of opening one United business card. And I thought it was a done and settled case until I started researching Pointsier for this episode. Because previously I'd only used Point.me. I hadn't really dived that deep into Pointsier before. And I was exclusively using Pointsier for international award searches. But just kind of for kicks, I decided to plug in my Dallas-Fort Worth-Denver route to see what would turn up. And I'm sure you can guess what happened. It found better options. So, little pop quiz for the more experienced travel hackers, the Everest climbers listening to this episode. Like, what options do you think it returned that I didn't think of? What options did it find that were not just booking directly with United or with American Airlines? Okay, so the partial credit answer that I'm hoping everyone got is that it found cheaper alternatives by booking using international partners instead of booking direct with the airlines. Because at the end of the day, United and American are still the only ones flying direct. It can't materialize new planes to fly that route. But it can save you points by routing your booking through different airlines. So it showed options where you transfer credit card points to an international airline that's part of a partnership with United, so part of Star Alliance, or part of a partnership with American, Oneworld. And because those international airlines have cheaper partner award charts, you can book domestic U.S. travel with an airline that's not based in the U.S. for less than you can book directly with the U.S. airline itself. I know, what a crazy system. But for the more experienced folks, can you guess what airline it had me transfer to? If you guessed Etihad, you get a solid B+. So Etihad is the national airline, I think, of United Arab Emirates. And I've heard in passing before of people transferring miles to Etihad so they can book American Airlines flights domestically within the US because they're all part of the One World Alliance. But I'd never looked into it much because I wasn't near an American Airlines hub. So I never did the research, but it makes sense because American Airlines doesn't really have any credit card transfer partners anymore. And so what you could do though, as a workaround, was transfer miles to Etihad instead, because Etihad does transfer from Amex and Capital One and Citi at a one-to-one rate. That, coupled with the fact that Etihad has a pretty good US partner award chart, where these flights apparently only cost 12,000 miles versus United's 15,000 miles, plus Capital One was running a 40% transfer promo, so you get 40% extra points when you transfer from Capital One to Etihad, which I had no idea about, but Pointsia displays that in the search result. The end result being that the flight only costs 9,000 miles. So pretty amazing option, but it gets better because that was the B+ grade answer. There's actually an even better option that it showed that I never would have thought to even Google for. And maybe here's where we really separate the pros from the hill climbers, right? Can you guess what the better option was for this Denver to Dallas-Fort Worth route on American Airlines? That's the hint I'll give. It's with American Airlines, but it's not booking through Etihad. And it's even cheaper than the Etihad partner booking, even with the Capital One transfer bonus. The answer is booking American Airlines via Iberia. Iberia is Spain's national airline, and that only costs 8,250 miles as the flat rate instead of 9,000 miles with Etihad and 15,000 miles with United. So basically half the price of the United award booking. And that was definitely not on my radar at all to look at Iberia's American Airlines award chart. If it was on your award chart and you'd answered it correctly, definitely A+ to you. But I do wonder if maybe you know this because you've either flown the route before or you're an American Airlines diehard, so you know all the ins and outs of the American Airlines system. But that goes back to, you know, how many other routes like this with other programs are you not aware of, that you haven't done the studying and the research and put in the hours to truly understand all of the various ins and outs and permutations that are possible? You can probably see now why Pointsia has become a critical part of my research workflow. Instead of going to airlines one by one and looking up cost, I now just use Pointsia instead, and oftentimes it unearths options that were not even remotely on my mind. Previously, I'd tried using Point.me to do this instead, and I was just not that impressed. Point.me, I think, is their closest competitor. They function in the same way. They're meant to do the same thing. Point.me looks super modern, like very slick modern UI, but you know, as the saying goes, you can't polish a turd. Well, you can polish a turd, but then you just have a really shiny turd, which sadly is sort of what Point.me is. I mean, I could just recap some of the issues here, which is that you can't search at all on Point.me without making an account first. Pointsia, you can just search immediately. You can go to pointsia.com. I'll link to all of this in the show notes and just start searching right now. Point.me, you gotta make an account. Once you've made an account, you only get 3 free searches. Then if you want to do more than 3 searches, you either have to pay $5 for 24 hours of searches or $12 for the full month. I would consider paying if it wasn't for the fact that it's also super slow. Like, it takes a good 2 minutes for it to search all of the various airline programs, whereas Pointsia, under 20 seconds every time. Coupled with the fact that Point.me, you can't search a date range. You have to search each date one by one. So if you're flexible on whether you fly out on a Friday or a Thursday or a Saturday, that would be three separate searches on point.me, and you'd use up your three free searches and you'd have to pay. That'd just be one search on points.ca. Additionally, it misses a lot of options. Like even just on this Denver, Dallas, Fort Worth domestic route, it doesn't show the Etihad option at all. Pointsia does show it. It just feels like it's a lot more comprehensive on Pointsia versus point.me. It really kind of just seems like point.me's main goal now is shilling their full service paid concierge program where you pay $200 to have someone at point.me do the whole thing for you. Like they'll manage your booking for you, which in theory, like seems maybe like palatable. Like I could consider paying $200 if it removed all of the stressors and they did all this stuff and saved me hours of research. But unfortunately, they're not delivering on that promise. There are multiple data points in our Discord of folks who have used their concierge service, and the results were subpar at best. Like you can do better just searching yourself. The people that they pay to do the searches for you were not particularly responsive, didn't do a great job searching different permutations. Like there's just no reason to pay for that service versus even just using point.me directly and spending the 20 minutes instead of spending $200. That coupled with just this constant like trying to get you to buy that service and then not letting you even search without an account and then giving you only three searches. I mean, everything feels a little slimy. Like, does anyone know the history of point.me? Like how they started? Was it always like this? Because I don't. So I'm genuinely like asking, like, did they get bought out by a hedge fund or something? Like maybe they were good in the past, but then post buyout, all the effort now just seems to be going towards marketing and upselling the premium concierge instead of just staying on top of actually improving the features and developing these features. Because it really shows, like Pointsia has completely leapfrogged them in terms of features, and it's completely free. Another tool that I did want to briefly touch on that's quite popular as well is Seats.Aero. So Seats.Aero is interesting because it serves a totally different purpose. And it took me a while to understand that. And so initially, I was disappointed with Seats.Aero because it wasn't doing the thing that I wanted it to do, which is that I wanted to do what Points.yeah was doing, which is help me find award tickets for a specific date to specific places. That is not what Seats.Aero is designed for. And that's, I think, what confuses a lot of people, myself included, because, you know, you Google like best award search tool or whatever, you get Reddit threads and people will recommend Seats.Aero alongside Pointsia. So you go into it thinking they serve the same purpose, but everyone has different travel use cases. And so it's important to understand the use case for Seats.Aero. The use case for Seats.Aero is for aspirational bookings. It's great for finding these booking unicorns on like first class cabins on ANA or Lufthansa, where the purpose of your trip is the flight, not so much the destination or when you fly. So Seats.Aero really shines for that use case because first class seats are notoriously hard to find. You want to be more flexible. So Seats.Aero lets you search these really broad search criteria. Like you can just enter, I want to find flights from the United States as a whole to Europe as a whole. And you'll just find availability for, I think, the next 2 months or 12 months if you pay for Pro. So it's really like you don't care where you fly out of or even really where you fly to. You just know the rough continent so that you can get that first class flight. They've got these pretty cool pre-built tools that will display first class availability on just a handful of really aspirational airlines like ANA, Lufthansa, Qatar. And they'll let you, you know, see when and where you can fly out of to get on these flights. And you can set alerts to get notified when, you know, one of these airlines dumps a bunch of seats. They have a Discord where you can set up alerts and, you know, talk about different like flight options. It's really a perfect tool for nomads or travel hackers or bloggers or, you know, people who have like a bucket list item to fly in like ANA's The Room or Qatar's Q Suites. And it's less useful for folks who are trying to plan a family vacation, because quite often only one seat will pop up at a time and you need to grab that one seat. So you're not going to find three or four seats for you, your wife, and your kids. Finally, another tool that serves a pretty different but important purpose is Expert Flyer. And that's a tool that's been around for quite a while. Like, I was using it back when I was doing mileage runs a decade ago. It looks like it was built in the 90s. Like, the interface is very old school. But it's still relevant because it performs a function really, really well that the other tools don't. It's not a substitute for Pointsia or Seats.aero and vice versa. But it is a very important tool to have because what it does is it helps alert you when an award seat opens on a specific flight that you set the alerts for. So the use case there is, let's say you know you're going to Japan, you know roughly what date you're gonna go, like you're gonna fly out on either a Thursday or a Friday. So there's only like three or four flights flying. And you maybe have one business seat booked, but you need to get a second business seat for your wife, and you have her in economy right now, but you wanna bump her up to business. So you would use Expert Flyer to set an alert for when a business class seat becomes available on that flight, and then you'll get notified when and if it opens up. So as far as I know, no other service has as good of an access to that data that Expert Flyer does. I believe they pay for like specific licenses that give them access to instant top level data on like seat availability and fare classes and all that stuff. No one else, I think, does it quite as well. So most of us put up with their really old interface. And it's a useful tool, especially at the end of your workflow. So once you've figured out all of your options, but something about your booking is suboptimal, there's something you want to improve on. Like, let's say Pointsia found you the cheapest award flights in business, but there's only one seat and you need two. Or if you have business booked, but you're like, I'd splurge more points to fly first, but first isn't currently available, you would use Expert Flyer to set up alerts to tell you the instant one of those seats opens so that you can then go in and change your flight. It's great for final optimizations like that versus using it, you know, near the beginning of the process and using that as your search engine, which I think in theory is feasible. And I think what I had to used to do because, you know, these other tools weren't available back in the day, but that no longer is the case. You know, you should be using Pointsia or Seats.aero for that kind of a search. The other downside, other than it just being like a really old interface that looks like it's from 1995, is that it also costs $5 a month. And because you're setting up these alerts for flights that you're flying, you know, 9, 10, 11, 12 months in the future, you're most likely going to have to keep that subscription active so that you keep getting alerts. So you're potentially paying for like 9, 10 months worth of that $5 subscription up until your trip is done. And that's, I think, how most people use it, is they have a trip in mind for the final optimizations. They have some seats that they want to monitor. And so they just pay for Expert Flyer and you just pay for it up until your trip actually departs. But at the end of the day, you know, if it's the difference between you flying a business class seat or a first class seat or your wife flying economy or business, paying, you know, $5 a month for, let's say, 12 months, $60, totally worth it, right? So between Expert Flyer, Seats.aero, and Pointsia, those pretty much cover all of my bases for booking award flights. I think they're like three must-haves in your tool belt. And you use them depending on the specific situation that you're in and what you're trying to book. That said, there is still a case for doing some of these things manually and acquiring some knowledge over time for the routes that matter to you and the routes that you fly the most often, because none of these tools are perfect. They all miss different things. Even if you have all three of them, they each still miss important things. For example, even Pointsia, they have a page on their website that explains some of the things they miss, like just kind of a forewarning, just due to the way award systems and flights are structured. like Poinciere, they won't show Southwest options, for example, because no one can show Southwest award options because Southwest doesn't allow it. That's why Google Flights also doesn't show Southwest award or cash options. You know, Southwest basically sues anyone who tries to show any of their search results outside of just being shown on southwest.com. So you won't be able to find some routes like that. And Poinciere also won't find like hacks, like adding a leg to the end of your itinerary to help reduce the overall award price. That's definitely something you can do for some airlines. It won't help you maximize your stopovers and your open jaws. You know, it doesn't tell you that this airline lets you do 5 stopovers and this airline lets you do a stopover on a one-way flight, but the other airline only lets you do it on a round-trip flight. Stuff like that is stuff that you sort of have to just learn over time. And it also doesn't show like cash rates that well. It shows some cash rates next to the award rates, so you can do a comparison right then and there. But I only see it on like 50% of the results. So you still have to compare it to Google Flights if you want to figure out like the value that you're getting. So doing some bits manually is still, I think, in your best interest. Maybe there is some tool that does all of it now. I mean, there's so many tools out there now. A lot of tools I didn't cover, you know, only covered 3 of them here, but I will link to a Google Sheet that DuckFan101 kindly shared with us on the Discord that compares all of the various tools out there right now. I think there's like 10, 20 columns of different tools and the features of each, and I think the price of each. If you have a favorite that isn't one of the ones I mentioned, definitely let me know. Leave a comment and make sure you let me know why you like it better than one of these other 3 options or what gap it fills that the other 3 options does not fill. I'm always kind of looking to expand or replace some of the tools in my award travel tool belt if there's something better out there for the job. But the big TLDR here is that these tools can save you a ton of time and will often get you 80% of the way to the finish line with only 20% of the work, which is ideal. And whether you want to dedicate another 80% effort just to optimize everything all the way up to the max, that's up to you. Like, it might make sense for a big trip, like a honeymoon, but you may want to just let it go for domestic flights where, you know, optimizing 80% of the way with only spending like 5-10 minutes doing a Poinciere search, that's probably enough, you know? And I definitely encourage you to read the post I made called The Optimizer's Curse over the holidays a couple months back if you're someone who struggles with over-optimization like I do. All right, everyone, that's it for this episode. Hopefully you found it helpful. If you're brand new to award bookings, hopefully this inspires you to go out there and book your first one instead of paying with cash. If you're pretty experienced already, hopefully some of these tools are new to you and you can integrate that into your workflow. But as always, if you enjoyed this episode, please do share it with a friend that might find it helpful as well. Most people find this podcast just through word of mouth, so really appreciate it when you pass it on. But otherwise, I'll catch you all next time for the March monthly recap. Thanks again for tuning in. See ya.